I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, how the quality of the workplace can make a big difference in how you're feeling over the weekend. This is for employed Americans. Our guests have done some very interesting work. I don't know if you knew this or not, but the Gallup Healthways has a U.S. daily poll, and they have randomly interviewed about 1,000 Americans every day since 2008. The poll asks questions about your emotional well-being on the previous day. So they have now 1.77 million individuals who have taken the poll from 2008 to 2012. And looking at negative emotions and how much they may drop for happy workers and unhappy workers from the week into the weekend. Professor John Helliwell is with us, senior fellow at the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research, co-director of their program on social interactions, identity, and well-being. He's also professor emeritus of economics at the University of British Columbia and author of the study, How Was the Weekend? How the Social Context Underlies Weekend Effects in Happiness and Other Emotions for U.S. workers. We'll be welcoming phone calls for the professor during this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Professor John Helliwell, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Yeah. And you're talking to us from an island off British Columbia, is that right?
I am indeed. And a lovely day it is here. I hope it is there too.
It's not, but that's all right. We're still happy. We're still happy at our jobs. We'll be happy during the weekend as well. You know, I had no idea that this is a lot of years to be asking everybody about their well-being the day before. I had no idea that anybody was looking at that.
It's a lovely source of data. The U.S. government does not ask many questions like this on their official surveys, so it's very nice that the Gallup Healthways poll have just gone ahead and done it, because a lot of interesting stuff has come out from the studies about life evaluations as a whole, as well as the focus of this paper, which is on emotions the day before, weekdays versus weekends.
Mm-hmm. And when they're looking at the emotions, what emotions did you look at?
Well, we looked at positive emotions, laughter, enjoyment, happiness, and negative emotions, worry, sadness, anger. And basically all of the emotions we looked at were better on the weekends than on weekdays, and on average, but especially for those whose jobs were not so hot.
Right.
The better the job, the less difference the weekend made.
Mm-hmm. And what about overall numbers? Do most people say in this survey that their jobs are not so hot, or do they say they're okay?
There are two questions that are asked, and they're both rather nice. In a sense, they're very specific. And so it isn't just how satisfied are you with your job, because that can depend on all kinds of things. These are two nice, specific questions. They come through separately and independently powerful for influencing your emotions. One unfortunately, the question just asked this on a 0 to 1 answer. We'd love to have on a 0 to 10 scale so we could separate the pretty good workplaces from the really good workplaces, but you have to just say yes or no. So here are the two questions. The first one is, to what extent, or is yours a high trust workplace? And the second question do you think of your immediate superior as more as a partner or a boss?
Mm-hmm.
And they're both really important. The trust is even more important than the other.
And talk more about what is meant by trust in the workplace.
Well, it's a general question as how trustworthy is your workplace. Of course, that can relate to, there are other surveys where questions are asked about trust in management, and other surveys still where you ask in trust among colleagues, and we find those are different. But in general, each aspect of trust, whether it's with people like you in the workplace, above you or below you, and of course a high trust workplace is also one where there's more trust between the people who are working there and their customers and their suppliers. Because as you might guess, how much you enjoy the day depends on the fun you have with all of those people, and it's going to be a lot more fun if you don't have to watch your back and you know they're going to look after you and help pick up your mistakes rather than exploit them.
Were the results of all of this different for part-time workers versus full-time workers?
Remarkably similar, but smaller, so that the effects were sort of two-thirds, half to two-thirds as big, depending on the emotion for the part-timers as the full-timers. And that reflects something like the average number of hours in part-time work compared to average full-time hours. So basically, it's the kind of proportionate response you'd expect. There's one more qualification on this, since we're laying all the cards on the table. One is that these effects about emotions yesterday are very apparently different when the questions are aimed at the weekend days versus the weekdays. But when you ask a more general question, which is the one we use, for example, in the World Happiness Report as the number one measure of the quality of people's lives, and it's also asked in this Gallup Daily Poll, think of your life as a whole, as a ladder, with the best possible life for you as a 10 and the worst possible life as a 0. How would you rate your current life these days? And these workplace trust and partnership questions come in enormously important, very important, but no weekend effects. So that the answers people give to these questions are the same, and the effects on their life evaluations are the same according to whether they're asked on weekdays or weekends. Well, that, from a scientific point of view, that's wonderful. It means when you ask about life as a whole, you get an answer that relates to life as a whole and not what it was like yesterday.
Right.
While if you ask quite specifically about how happy were you or sad were you yesterday, people focus on what was going on that day and they give you consistent answers. So it's rather nice. So all of this paper is about the emotions yesterday, but it's an important sidelight in all of this that these quality of the workplace things are very important for how you value your life every day of the week.
Right. Interesting. Work is very important, isn't it? So to look at how the workplace affects what your weekend is, for those people who are not very happy on the job, who have all kinds of problems on the job, their need for the weekend and the amount of happiness going up on the weekend was more significant than those people who were pretty happy on the job, you know, and so there wasn't as much of a happiness spike on the weekend. Is that an overall general statement that bears the truth?
For these emotions, definitely the case. Indeed, for a person, if we compare a person who's a superior is more like a boss than a partner and operating in a low trust workplace, and that's a minority of workers. Most workers in this survey think of themselves as working in a high trust environment and having a supervisor who's more like a partner than a boss. So that's pretty encouraging news. It's between two thirds and three quarters give the positive answer to this question among these millions of American workers. So that's the good news. What more do we need on that one?
Well, so that they're not as, when it comes to the weekend, they're not, oh, thank goodness that work week is over, now I can be happy. They're maybe happier, but not as happy as the people who may not be as happy anyhow, but the people who have. I know it goes on, doesn't it? The people who are not happy during the work week are a little bit happier on the weekend, but not as happy.
Some people who are reading, this really takes a second more to think about. Some people who read the paper have said, oh, that means I'll have better weekends if I get a worse job. Because, of course, the weekend effect is greater.
Right.
So our reply to that is to say, well, first of all, we went back and double-checked and said, what are the emotions like on the weekends for people who have good jobs? And the answer is they're way better than the people who had bad jobs. But on weekdays, the difference is even bigger. So the idea of taking a bad job to have better weekends doesn't make any sense at all. If you got a bad job, it'd make worse weekends. And so a way of thinking about it is getting a bad job is like hitting yourself with a hammer every weekday, and then you stop hitting yourself on the weekend.
Right.
Well, that'll give you a big weekend effect. But, of course, on the weekend, you've still got bruises and pains, and you're a pretty unhappy person.
Right.
So the best thing is to stop hitting yourself with a hammer on weekdays.
Right, exactly. If you can
smaller weekend
find the right
effect,
job.
But every day it's better than it would have been otherwise.
To tell you the truth, I'm surprised, because you hear so many people gripe about their jobs, that two-thirds to three-quarters of Americans felt pretty positively about their workplace. Doesn't that strike you as quite high?
It is, that's encouraging. Now, it's a 0-1 scale, and I'd love them to ask these questions on a bigger scale so you could really get the fine points on it. But it is encouraging. And, of course, given how important it is to people's sense of well-being and emotional health, it's a good result.
Mm-hmm. It also is interesting that what people could do who are arranging a workplace to make it a happier place for most people. You talk about they could aim to improve the social experience of as many employees as possible to ensure meaningful work, to encourage coworkers to get together, to recognize employee achievements, to lift up the happiness level of the people who work at a place.
Yeah, and I think mostly that means thinking about it, not announcing it. You know, there are all kinds of these workplace HR things that say, this is a high trust. We're going to make trust one of our number one objectives, and we're all in this together. But so often these things are just statements, and they don't reflect the way things are actually done. So then when a new initiative comes along, it comes from the top down rather than from the bottom up. Mm-hmm. And when consultation's going on, they're about listening and then carrying on the way things were before. We do know from a whole lot of studies that the workplaces that are the happy ones are the ones where, in fact, people do feel they're all on the same team. And that comes from actually being in a workplace where that's true. And that's not an easy workplace to manage in some ways. It's complicated because you're moving away from a set of fixed rules to a set of more general understandings. And so more things can go wrong. But, of course, many, many more things can go right. We've been, in the last 30 years, moving a bit in the opposite direction. So things go wrong in the workplace. Somebody talks about harassment or some kind of discrimination. And so then committees and rules and everything else are brought in with good intent there. But in the end, and you could see the corresponding thing with respect to travel expense claims and this and that, the amount of overhead and regulation that is in a typical person's workplace and requires them to fill in more forms to show their on the company team and doing the right thing has grown a lot over the last 30 years. The idea is supposed to be to cut risk, but in fact, the average effect in most workplaces, which started off as very low-risk workplaces in the first place, is that workers who then are in this situation and say, well, if I have to fill in all these forms, it means you don't trust me. Well, if you don't trust me, why should I trust you? You're making me spend half an hour a day or 15 minutes a day filling in these reports about what I did for you last week. Well, if this is a high-trust workplace, over the months and years, you'll see what I do for you.
Sure.
And it won't be more just because I've had to fill in these forms. And so to some extent, it means rolling back some of this creeping. It's called transparency, but it's usually more than it's usually more form filling and hiring of officers who are designed to, as it were, prevent things going wrong, but they end up stopping people from connecting. They stop a lot of innovation. And I think there's lots of room for improvements there.
We're going to welcome phone calls and find out from the audience. You can be part of this survey. And we'd like to know about your weekends and your weekdays, how often you feel pretty good on the job, whether or not you feel a whole lot better on the weekends because the job is bad, and so the weekends gives you time to relax and be happier and laugh and alleviate some of the stress that you may feel during the week, or if you don't notice that much of a difference because your workplace is a fairly happy place where you feel you're doing something meaningful, you have social interaction with those you work with, you don't feel the kind of anger, resentment on the job, you feel pretty good about it. So you have good weekends, but maybe not, the difference isn't as great as it is for people who have negative experiences on the job. So what do you think? We would like to hear from you. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Would you say that you're among the 2/3 to 3/4 of Americans who have a mostly positive response to the workplace, that it's a mostly positive place in which you work? Do you think that you have a highly trustworthy place where you work? Your immediate supervisor sees you as a partner, or do you see the immediate supervisor as a boss? What difference does that make? And what about the little, particularly those of you who are in happy workplaces, what is it that makes them happy? What are the small things that everybody could do to make the workplace a happier place? We'd love to hear from you. 800-486-8655 is the number. We'll start taking calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor John Helliwell is here now, senior fellow at the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research and co-director of their program on social interactions, identity, and well-being, author of the study, How Was the Weekend? How the Social Context Underlies Weekend Effects in Happiness and Other Emotions for U.S. Workers. And we start our calls with Joe in Madison. Hi, Joe.
Good afternoon.
Hi. How's the week going, Joe?
How's what going?
How's the week going?
Oh, typical. So, consequently, I think it's the strong consensus at our workplace is we just live for the weekends and quitting time.
Woo! Why?
Well, you know, it seems in here, again, the consensus with coworkers and in having conversations with family and other friends, the corporate mentality now is to squeeze everything out of their employees, whatever it takes. We know that they're expendable and that there's a line of people that want their job. So they don't, I personally look at the corporations, don't care about people anymore. They want 100% productivity, and that's it. So everybody just, they grind all day. You never can satisfy. The first line managers tend to have an idea. You know, they know what's going on, but it seems like when you get above that, it's grind. And everybody just can't wait till they can get away and breathe again.
Professor Helliwell.
It's not a majority view that Joe has, but it's very, very common. And so one of the questions to people like Joe from the rest of us is, why do you keep in that kind of job? And the reason answers people give typically are they think that's the way work is, that that's a typical workplace. That's because the way managers now are. The evidence we've got from these big samples of American workers is, in fact, there are a lot of workplaces that are not like that. And workplaces don't have to be like that. And so then the question is, what can be done about it. And that often, if the stage is set by somebody else who doesn't want to pay any attention to you and your colleagues, then you may have to start thinking about something else to do with your life.
Why do you stay, Jill?
I'm surprised to hear that he said that it wasn't a majority because, once again, when I talk to any of my family or other folks in whatever occasion we have, it's a powerful majority of the people that I have a conversation with anyway, that their workplaces are very similar.
Hmm. And why do you stay? Do you think because they're all that way?
That, and we know that jobs are just flat hard to come by.
Mm-hmm.
You want to lose whatever vacations you may have or your 401k contributions to start all over again, And I'm convinced that corporations know that, so that helps them facilitate their exploiting their employees.
Mm. Professor?
There's no doubt that lock-in effect that Joe talks about is real. And so it's not, you can't just say, oh, I'm going to turn in this job and get a new one. It's a very costly thing in so many dimensions. What's sad in a way is there aren't more managers who are managing workplaces like the one Joe and his family and friends work in, who don't realize that if that workplace was set up differently, they would actually do better in their bottom line in the long term, and by having employees who are engaged and part of the team. Everybody knows that when it's your job, it's one that you really want to do well, where you think the customer is king, it isn't the managers who think so, these are your pals. Then you have a lot more fun, and as a team, you do better.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as workers are treated as little parts that are screwed together and work uncomplainingly, regardless of the social environment, then you'll have these toxic workplaces with unhappy workers. But the point of the research is to show that that needn't be the case. And, of course, in the kinds of workplaces Joe is talking about, the change has to come from the top. And whether there's any possibility of that in workplaces he knows about is another question.
Right. Thank you, Joe, for your call. Ann in Pewaukee. Hi.
Hi. I love this study, John. I'm so glad you did it. I was wondering about how many people get sick on Sunday thinking about going back to work on Monday. I'm thinking teachers, social workers, case managers. Is there anything in your study about how sick you are on Sunday? I call it Sunday what?
Yes. Well, there were two things we were looking for because they had been found in other studies. One was sort of the Friday burst of joy because the weekend is coming, and the other is the one you've emphasized, with the Sunday blues, because tomorrow it's back it's back into hell. We found that in fact that on average those were not big effects, but essentially the emotional state on Saturday and Sunday was equivalent. And of course, the activity, maybe Sunday is more relaxing in other ways and allows you to think less about the job. And while Saturday, you're busy shopping and doing all kinds of other things.
Mm-hmm. And these studies didn't look at a breakdown by profession, did they? She mentioned social workers and teachers, et cetera. There's not a breakdown as to who's the happiest.
We'd love to know more about what kinds of workplaces, and it's the professional splits that Anne is mentioning, but also if we knew more about actually what kind of workplace it is and what kind of jobs people had, we could, I'm sure, find lots more interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to work with what we have.
Yeah. Anne, you don't have to say what you do, but are you a happy worker?
You know, I have nothing to complain about. I'm like a case manager. I'm a consultant, IRIS consultant. I don't know if you know what IRIS is, but anyway, I get to work from home.
Mm-hmm.
So I have nothing to complain about, but I feel a little sick on Sunday thinking about all the stuff I have to do on Monday.
I know. I think we all feel a little blue, don't we? For having a good weekend. I'd like this to go on a little bit longer. Thank you so much. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Let's go to Dimitri in Milwaukee next. Hi, Dimitri.
Hi there, guys. I had a quick comment or question, and it had to do with job stability. So the prevailing thought is, of course, everyone wants job stability, which is great, but it's kind of a double-edged sword, because if you work for an organization that refuses to discipline people, then you're stuck with people, if you're trying to do your job, that are making it a little difficult. And I've worked for all sorts of organizations, ones that have great job stability, ones that don't. So I've seen both sides of the spectrum. And it's curious that no one thinks about the other side, where you're striving toward, a more cohesive workforce.
That's a very interesting point, Dimitri. Are you suggesting that the more cohesive workplace comes when flexibility is encouraged or discouraged in terms of job tenure and so on?
I wouldn't even say flexibility. I would say more that your management also has the interests of the team in mind. And I mean, that's not my case where I work now. I love where I'm at, but I've seen it previously where it's just not, someone that you work with does a poor job and you don't see, and everyone knows it, but you don't see them being reprimanded, and you go, well, I have to work with this person in the future, and they're probably going to do the same thing again. So that kind of decreases morale, even though everyone knows that they have a very stable job security.
Oh, very interesting point. Yes, there's lots of evidence about that. When you get this kind of deep personal connection with your colleagues and coworkers, you are actually feel close enough to them that if they're doing something wrong, you can step in and help them not make a mistake. And it's not just because the team as a whole will do better. You actually care about them and their self-regard, and you want them to know they've done a good job too. There's a lot of studies of operating room protocols, which are their classic sort of team situation, where there's a lot of gradations between the boss surgeons and the other people, where some of these protocols that were originally designed, they're designed to stop things going wrong in the operating room, involve people taking off their masks and meeting each other and actually getting proper face-to-face contact and discussing the case before they did it. Mm. It turns out that, yes, that did avoid some patients who were in the wrong operating room. But the really big gains, and they were huge, were coming because now just that modest face-to-face interaction and feeling that, yes, we're on the same team and the results here depend on all of us, led to a huge increase in the extent to which the previously lower status people felt they had a license, an opportunity, and even a responsibility to say to the surgeon, wouldn't that be better if you held it the other way up? Because everybody makes mistakes. And everybody, the more people you have looking at something with the common interest in mind, A, of course, the more fun you'll have, but B, the more likely you are to get the scalpel held the right way around.
Exactly. Which is always a good thing. How important is it to take that operating room team and this team idea, which can apply to so many different professions, to take that outside the workplace? Is this just too simple a thing to think of that it might be really good for everybody to go to a movie together or go out to dinner or, do a bowling thing? Is that important?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, our broad field that we're getting deeper into here, trying to link the social context and well-being, we're finding it true in neighborhoods, as you'll be discussing tomorrow. It's true in the workplace. It's essentially true everywhere. There's some nice studies at a Center of Evolutionary Biology in Oxford where they're arguing that doing things together with other people is a primal human need and value. So that, for example, they put rowers together, and just rowers who were on these rowing machines sitting side by side, who were just in keeping the same time with each other but doing the same amount of work, had about a 30% higher pain threshold. So just that very basic thing. The same research team had people shown funny things and laughing or not, and it turns out in a context where you're laughing together, and this gets to your question about going bowling together and going to a movie together, where you were actually laughing together, the overall well-being effects were hugely greater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't say enough for laughing. That's so true. Yeah, Dimitri, you have a nice laugh, too. Let's go next to Mike in Racine. Hello, Mike.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm wondering about intentional structures in the workplace that might work against people. It's my understanding at Johnson Wax now, they have teams, but they're competitive within the team, and then they're ranked as a team, and that's made public, like on a whiteboard. It seemed to me these kind of arrangements would not be conducive to healthy relationships. Are you familiar with are more of these structures being imposed? I understand Enron used to fire the lowest 10% every year. And anyway, is this structure taking traction around the country where teams are actually competing within themselves?
These fashions and procedures come and go over the years. The most toxic form of them, and this happens, you can see it in medical classes, you can see it in a lot of university courses, you definitely see it in the Enron idea that the least productive people at the end of the year are gone. That pits worker against worker, team against team, and that's precisely the wrong way to do it, because you want to foster this idea of being a bigger team. So you want to help other people do better, not, as it were, as part of your own survival, have to make sure that somebody else does worse than you do, because, of course, that's going to break down the all-important links among the teams and the sense of cooperation in the firm as a whole. So that kind of jungle model whereby the success, your success, must depend on somebody else's failure, in my view, is bad psychology and bad management. And I think you're suggesting the same thing.
Hmm. Thank you, Mike, for the call. Can you get a sense of a place before you go to work? I'm thinking of people who are just graduating from school, or they're thinking of working, they're changing, they're moving, whatever, they have to find a new place of employment. Is there some kind of checklist you can take with you before you sign on for a company?
Well, one of the things that would be wonderful, and I can imagine in the modern era it will happen, whereby it'll be possible to go to a site and actually ask people who work at a place now, hey, gang, what is it like to work there, by these human dimensions that we're talking about today. It's not about salary and benefits, although they're relevant, of course. It's about the things that aren't so easily communicated or found out unless you're actually talking to somebody who lives there. And because it's not all that easy to change jobs and uproot yourself, it would be really important to be able to have that kind of information in advance. Now, of course, many firms will do whatever they can not to allow that to happen. In part, these are the ones who are busy trying to grind as much as they can out of people and not have them know about it. But good workplaces ought to be happy to have themselves and their potential employees have access to current employees to get the skinny on what goes on.
Right. Jim in Rice Lake, hello.
I have this one contribution for your guest, and that is that I am a professional. I won't say in which profession, but I work both in private practice and in government, and I feel that the caps went perhaps because profit has been removed. Now, admittedly, most of my career has been with collective bargaining rights, which we've recently lost. But I felt there was, because of the lack of sense of requirement of profit, I felt a greater camaraderie, sense of team purpose, and generosity in the public sector environment. I'd like to hear your guest response.
Okay. Thank you, Jim.
That's very interesting. The real trick is to make that profit environment work. And, I mean, we do have some experience in some kind of profit environments that are set up differently, like employee-owned firms, for example, or cooperatives. By and large, workers in cooperatives, which are kind of middle ground, right? They're profit-making businesses. They have to make profits in order to continue. They need to be efficient. They've got all the market incentives pressuring on them, but they think of it differently. So they think of their customers who are members the way they think of themselves, and they're all in it together. And so that kind of environment is private sector. but it's got a more cooperative structure to it than you find when people think too much about management being separate from shareholders, being separate from employees, being separate from customers, and then negotiate and worry about who's getting what size of the pie we're making. In the cooperative structures, whether they're formally co-ops or something else, and government departments can sometimes be like that or sometimes not, then, of course, people concentrate more on how does the pie taste? How big is the pie? How are we doing? And, of course, it's more fun to operate in an environment where you're working with a lot of other people and having some fun doing so.
And thank you for the call. Judith is next in Grand Marsh. Hi, Judith.
That was made for me. He said the magic word, pie. Last night on public television, there was an hour on pie makers and an hour on bakeries, right back to back. And if you wanted a study of happy workers, that was it. It was the craft of the product. Many of them were passed down from great-grandma to, you know, the junior kid that was learning to bake. The craft of it was the product was perfect. Everybody was loving it. And if you go anywhere and you work for one of these places, you're treated like a goddess. It was absolutely, I can't stop smiling, even thinking about it the next day. And you have to look it up and treat yourself to watch this. Diet or no diet, you will see people who are dedicated to making a wonderful product, top of the line, and being devoted to what they're doing, and they have a religious following. It was so exciting. I highly recommend pie and bakeries for the next work study.
Was this a certain bakery in some part of the country? Or?
It was tons of them. It was like 3 minutes per one, and you went from one to one to one to one.
Oh.
It was, you have to see it. It's one of the best things I've seen on public television for a while. It was great.
Great, Judith. Well, and did you have a piece of pie today?
I had to get one, yeah.
I'll bet you did. I would have, too. You're making me want to get one right now, Judith.
Well, enjoy, and anybody who sees that show can stop smiling.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. So we should make pies, Professor Hallowell.
Absolutely. Well, and it doesn't have to be pies, but to have that collection of happy workplaces lauded is wonderful.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Judith, for the recommendation. Victor in West Allis. Hi.
Hi. Hey, to answer your question, how can you find a job about a company? What people, I hate those most because they don't have, you know, good muscles. Hey, here's how it works. I'm a temporary worker. I did that after I left the corporate world at another job, and I had talents that people wanted. And before you know, is the company wanted to hire you after 3 months. Then I was contracted for 6 months, 9 months, and a year. So the point is, if you want to see what a company is really like, it's backdoor, as I call it, and you can get a real good insight how they treat your employees and everything else. And also remember, too, a lot of companies are hiring temporary workers to see how good you are, so you can prove yourself. So that's something to keep in mind.
Professor Hallowell.
Yeah, it's a smart idea, and there are a lot of pros. There are a lot of difficulties with a sequence of part-time jobs, but thinking of them as a way of finding out about potential full-time jobs, that's a smart idea.
Yeah, it is. Thank you, Victor, for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. We're talking about, let's frame this again. For both part and full-time workers, negative emotions drop by significant margins from the week into the weekend. Average levels of stress, anger, worry, and sadness fall, but they fall a lot more for people who are having tough work weeks than they do for people who are pretty happy on the job. So we're talking about how to create happiness on the job. Our guest is the author of the study, How Was the Weekend? How the Social Context Underlies Weekend Effects in Happiness and Other Emotions for U.S. Workers. Professor John Hallowell is with us, senior fellow at the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research and co-director of their program on social interactions, identity, and well-being. He's also a professor emeritus of economics at the University of British Columbia. Here's how you reach us. Our phone lines are open for you right now. They've been They've been very busy. And how would you measure the quality of the social context of your workplace? Do you feel when Friday comes, thank God it's Friday, I just can't wait to get out of this joint and go be happy for a couple days? And do you find that you're happier on the weekends, as many people will say they are, but you're not really unhappy during the week, during your workplace week? And why is that? We'd like to hear from you. So call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor Halliwell, here's a message from Lynn on Facebook. We have a friend who works in the Appleton area who's in his 60s and never takes a break or a weekend. He's concerned that he'll be fired. He goes to work early in the morning, works well into the evenings. All of the young people put in these long hours, so he feels the pressure to do the same. Doesn't take off on weekends, but just works 8 hours a day, which to him is a break. When he's back from an overseas trip, he arrives home at 2 to 3 a.m., but feels the need to be back at work early in the day the next morning. We think that he will just die on the job.
Well, it's a sad message.
Yes.
There are two kinds of workaholics. There are the ones who just love it so much they don't take enough time to think about other things. And there are ones, and it sounds like this is one, where it's driven by fear that the only way to keep going is to keep going at that unhappy pace. And that's a sad situation if it's true,
mm-hmm.
when it's true.
Do you think, Professor Halliwell, that we would be all happier if we only worked 3 days a week or 4 days a week?
Well, part of this is we're comparing weekends and weekdays, and we find that the job is really important for both your weekends and your weekdays. So you're improving every day by having a good job. That then raises the question, how much of a good thing do you want? And Lynn's message is on that same theme. You can have too much of even a good thing, of even a good job, but especially a bad job, you can have too much of. There are some studies about what the right work length is for getting work-life balance. Of course, it's going to differ for everybody by your stage of life and of course, how much fun the job is. We find a lot of people, when we ask them how many social hours they have each day, and the more hours they have, social hours, the happier they are. Normally, it's a couple of hours more on the weekend than the weekday. But the amount of social hours that lots of full-time workers report on weekdays are so high that clearly they're counting their hours on the job as social hours. They are working with friends, having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that actually they're getting paid for it may make it better, not worse. And so we get an overlap. Well, clearly a job like that, if you really are having as much fun in the job as you are off the job, if you're off the job and you don't have a lot of friends off the job and you're sitting watching television, for sure you're going to be less happy than if you were in that environment joking and doing something interesting and important with your friends on the job.
Mm-hmm.
But for everybody, of course, there is a nice mix between downtime and changing and so on. The average seems to be somewhere in the top end of regular full-time, so 35 to 45 hours. But that average covers everybody's own experience, which can be very different.
Right. Dan in Chicago area. Hi, Dan.
Hi, thank you for taking this call. For the guest, I just want to say that I live in Washington, D.C. area. I'm just in business in Chicago area, and I listened to this network, and I was like, wow, let me put my two cents in. I was born and raised overseas in Japan, a little island called Okinawa, came to the United States, lived in Europe for 9 years, 6 years in Africa, and worked for the federal government as well as private industry, and it's a different culture in a Western, well, in North America hemisphere, speaking from the United States, overseas they have a tendency to kind of empower their people and mentor them, And they're so much more happier. I remember when I was in Germany, those people work 4 days a week, 10-hour shifts, and have 3 days off. They're happier. They give them a huge 2 weeks off on vacation from the get-go, and they have a month. But although Americans have possibly that vacation time, you know, kind of like frowned upon when you ask for that vacation. What do you think of that, Professor?
Well, thank you, Dan, for bringing in the international perspective, which we hadn't got to in the earlier discussions. Really important, because it shows there are different ways of running things and running them well. After the last World Happiness Report but one came out, I was invited to come on over and talk to the Danish business
Summit. Oh.
In the course of that, I took advantage to talk to a lot of these senior executives of large and successful firms about just the kind of issues we're talking about here. And it was quite apparent, of course, Denmark, by most of these studies, is the happiest or in the top three or four happy countries in the world. And it's quite apparent that this is true in the workplace as well. And so a number of them described to me how it is they thought that was true. And it was very evident that they had much flatter structures than are common in the United States, especially. So much more use of common lunchrooms, much flatter pay structures with the, and of
yes.
course that obviously makes people feel they're more in the same boat together. But many better horizontal contacts. And so you have a technical innovation. And of course the Danish firms are famous for fast and effective technology design and delivery in a manufacturing context. So this is a very modern set of enterprises they're running and succeeding at. And they said the ability to have the people on the shop floor and the designers and the senior executives all able to communicate with each other without embarrassment in real time in the cafeteria and other places is a real advantage, not only for their fun, everybody thinks they've got a say in something, but their ability and pleasure they get from working with people who are very different from themselves has an obvious payoff. Of course, they see the advantage, right? You could have somebody who's been on that shop floor and he sees an O-ring that doesn't work in a way that somebody on the technical side wouldn't have thought of, and management never
right.
would have.
Well, that's fascinating. Thanks, Dan, very much for your call. And what about this? You mentioned it here when you talked about the Danish system. What about this whole issue of CEOs making 300 times what other workers do? What kind of negative effect does that have in the workplace?
I'm sure it's important because it's obviously much harder to think we're all in this together
yes.
when there's that kind of, and it's actually happened at the same time as a lot more of these formal reporting requirements that we were talking about earlier have been introduced, and many more of you must tell us every week what you have done for us this week, showing evidence of lack of trust and more desire to reassert managerial control over the specifics and details and structure of the working day. And of course that shuts down innovation, it shuts down cooperation. And if workers feel that anything they do to improve the product is just going to end up in a bigger presidential bonus and nothing for them, then that kind of cuts the process off at the beginning.
Right.
Corporate executives I once talked to about these issues of importance of trust in the workplace. One of them said, does that mean if we can have higher trust in the workplace? Because we had a result that said that in terms of life satisfaction, somebody who lives, this is in a Canadian study where workplace trust was measured on a scale of 10, so that someone who worked in a workplace where the trust level was 1 point higher was as happy as they would have been with a one-third higher income. So this executive said, does that mean if we can get more trust, we can pay people less? And so I said to him, you really don't get this, do you?
No, I guess not.
Because it was precisely that kind of thinking Let's be more productive so I can take it. Rather than that we can share it that made it not happen in the first place.
Professor Halawula, delight to speak with you again. I like your sense of humor, too. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Have a good day.
And you as well. Professor John Halawula, and he is senior fellow at the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research. Interesting study. How was the weekend? Thanks to K.P. Whaley and Scotty Myers for producing this hour. And thanks for your calls and for listening. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. News is coming up.